This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Thank you for joining us for our Radio Main Street across North Dakota. Michelle Comer recently became the second North Dakota Commerce Commissioner to leave the Capitol for another job since the 2016 election. Her tenure in the agency was marked by the upheaval caused by the pandemic and by an audit that raised political hackles. Today we'll share an excerpt of her conversation with John Harris, host of the Prairie Pulse television show.
Michelle, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You're leaving government for a new venture.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
I'd be happy to. It is hard for me to believe that almost 4 years has elapsed since I decided to serve with the Burgum administration and Team North Dakota, and I'm super grateful for what I've learned while I've been there. It's been such a blessing to work alongside true public servants. The time's gone really fast, and I leave with a lot of lessons learned, but my next adventure is back in the private sector. And I have taken some inspiration from the small business owners and entrepreneurs that I've worked with in the last 4 years. And so we purchased a company, and the core of the company is group healthcare benefits along with individual policies, which include Medicare, but we're looking forward to building on that platform, on that core, to offer HR services, the human infrastructure side of the business, to small companies here in the Valley. And I'm really excited about that. And if I didn't say it already, the name of the company is High Road Partners. And that name has a lot of meaning for me. That's been a really important road for me to be on for my career, always trying to take the high road and do the right thing.
Well, that's what you're doing. But let's shift now to the subject of North Dakota's economy, which is what you've been working with, of course, for the last 4 years. And have you seen improvement since we last talked? And, you know, this has been an unprecedented time. I'm going to quit using that word, I hope, soon. But can you talk about that?
Yeah. You and I both want to remove that word from our vocabulary, and I bet we're not alone. But it is very accurate. When we talked in June, we were still really trying to understand what the impact was and what was going to be. And now we're a few months removed from that, and we are sitting in a much better spot. I say that with a high level of awareness that there's still a lot of suffering and struggle going on. I am completely aware of that. But we've gone from high unemployment in the 12% range in North Dakota to now it's 6.6%. Nationally, we're at about 8.4%. So North Dakota is faring better. We're in the top 8 of the lowest unemployment rates in the nation. And we are seeing some recovery. It varies by sector. And if you want to talk a little bit about that, we sure can. But we see signs of hope. But again, we want to be hopeful and optimistic and be aware that there are still a lot of struggles that are going on right now and will continue to go on for a while.
Yeah, so which sectors are seeing improvement?
We had what we're referring to as the double black swan incident in the spring, which was a significant decrease in oil demand, followed very, very closely after by this global pandemic. And one of those would have been significant enough to deal with. But our energy sector, we're still seeing prices hovering around $30 a barrel, which is significantly less than what we were seeing in 2014 and 2015 when we were between $90 and $100 a barrel. There's just a decreased demand, and that demand decrease is foreseeable here in the future. We're not seeing significant signs of a quick recovery there. And so that has a big impact on our economy in North Dakota, obviously. Now, moving over to the industries that have been affected by the pandemic, well, it's everybody. And it's such an interesting economic challenge because it wasn't regional. It wasn't limited to an industry. It was a global, immediate impact. And I don't know that there is any precedent for that. What we're seeing in North Dakota is, of course, decline in hospitality and tourism. We're seeing our restaurant industries that were, of course, affected by the closure in May and coming back from that, but not at full capacity. We're seeing differing situations in manufacturing. It really depends on the product that's being manufactured. Some of our manufacturers are really suffering. Some have actually seen really increased demand due to onshoring and the type of products that they might produce. Again, I think that in North Dakota, we have a lot of reason to be hopeful. A pandemic cannot take away our work ethic, our commitment to our community. It can't take away our wide open spaces. And that's something that I'm really hopeful about for North Dakota.
With the rising cases here in the fall, how much is it impacting again? Or because while we sort of reopened at certain levels, and so what's going on now?
You know, it's a little early to tell. We did have some shifts in risk level in some of our counties, and that affects the level of of opening, so to speak, of the economy. But very recently that happened. This increase in cases, of course, is corresponding with the kids going back to school and back to university. But the preliminary feedback that we're getting from our restaurants and hospitality industries is that they're continuing to see demand, not the same, not pre-pandemic levels, of course not, but it's a little too early to tell what the increase in cases is doing to the economy right now.
In general, how are small businesses, mom and pop businesses doing? We know some businesses won't make it through this.
Mm-hmm. You know, I always love that question in North Dakota because 87% of North Dakota companies have 20 or fewer employees. So small businesses are the heart and soul of our state. 56% of North Dakota companies have fewer than 5 employees. So when we talk about mom and pop businesses, we're literally talking about most North Dakota businesses. And so again, we're seeing mixed results. We know that in the restaurant industry, there's a really high level of business failure within the first 5 years, no matter what the economic circumstances are. And we can't forget that. The pandemic is, of course, affecting that situation. But again, we are seeing some good persistence in those spaces. One of the things that you know exists today that didn't in June and didn't in May is just a higher level of fatigue, all sorts of fatigue, physical fatigue, mental fatigue, but financial fatigue. Now we have businesses that are going on 50 or 75% occupancy for many, many months. And that is, of course, going to continue to cause strain.
I know you mentioned tourism, you know, being off. That's obviously traveling from probably out of state, in state, but probably more staycations or local tourism mm-hmm. happening. But how long do you think it's going to take to recover for those?
I wish I had the answer to that question. What I do see, however, is a lot of opportunity. So I'm told that as of today, we've seen about $120 million decrease in the state and local and regional taxes that are typically attributed to visitors. So there has been a significant impact. We're seeing 50% less flights in and out of North Dakota. So we know that out-of-state visitors is significantly reduced. However, one of the things that our tourism department had in place before the pandemic was this, the idea that we should follow our curiosity, not the crowds. And we started promoting that idea before the pandemic. Little did we know how important that would be. And so we see a lot of opportunity for North Dakota to become a place where people feel safe coming because of our wide open spaces. We, of course, have to get our arms around this level of infection because that is going to hamper that ambition. But we do have opportunity there.
You mentioned the unemployment rate just a moment ago. Of course, there were plans, payroll protection plans that helped employers keep people on board. What do you think is the future? I mean, will unemployment stabilize in the next quarter, or will it take a year or two for it all to really get to where we know where it's going to end up?
Yeah, I don't have that crystal ball necessarily either, mm-hmm. but I do like the trends that we're seeing. As I mentioned, we're in the top 8 of the lowest unemployment rates in the nation right now, and coincidentally or not, our competition is in the Midwest, and we're seeing good signs there. We're seeing recovery. I do think that it's positive that the stimulus, pandemic unemployment insurance stimulus money, that program ceased on 7/31. It was replaced by a program with lesser benefits, which I think was important, but we are hearing and seeing help wanted signs all over the state. And so we're looking forward to seeing folks get back to work. Of course, in North Dakota and many other states, there was a time and in certain positions where it was more financially lucrative to stay home with those additional benefits. Mm-hmm. And that's because the federal stimulus package was designed very quickly. I don't usually use the words federal and quickly in the same sentence. And, you know, was it done perfectly? Of course not. So that stimulus, both for unemployment insurance and individual stimulus, was designed to work for people in New York City, in California, and in Velva, North Dakota. And as a result, it was a very generous benefit. As we see that run off and we see people coming back into the workplace, I think it's then that we will begin to see what the true impact is. To your point, which businesses didn't survive? How many jobs do we really have? But we're seeing a lot of positive information in the marketplace about job openings today.
Restaurants and bars, you mentioned them a little bit, but, you know, how can they continue to survive it? You know, because at 25%, they probably don't make a profit. Mm-hmm. They need to get back to more normal levels.
Yeah.
So what's going on there?
You know, a few things. So right now, most of our restaurants can operate at 75% capacity. our ability to control infection is directly related to the capacity guidelines for our restaurants and bars. And being out in the community and listening to restaurant and bar owners in the hospitality industry, we have seen a lot of innovation, a lot of creativity, a lot of businesses that have gotten really, really good at takeout, and some other options like expanding their outdoor dining. And, you know, we at the Commerce Department had a grant program called the Economic Resiliency Grant that's actually just closed on August 28th. I think we might have talked about that in June. And we have some preliminary numbers to report there. But we are seeing restaurants and bars being part of a big group of applicants that are taking advantage of that grant and using those dollars to make investments in their places of business so that customers feel safe coming there, dining there, extending dining areas on the patio. And I'm really hopeful about the impact that that will have, because in the end, it's consumer confidence that is the difference maker. It's consumer confidence about coming back to the restaurant or the bar or the shop that is going to result in long-term economic recovery.
If businesses, you know, eventually switch to more of a Zoom meeting environment, which we're sort of in, will some adopt it, you think, permanently? And will that affect businesses and travel?
You know, I had some really great conversations with a lot of folks about that. One just yesterday, as a matter of fact. And we were talking about just that, the permanency of this adoption of Zoom or remote meetings. Our inclination is to think that there will be some more permanent adoption of that. But I don't think that that's going to replace human interaction. I think that as humans, we are social animals and we like the interaction of people. I might be 6 feet apart from you, but I'm really grateful to be here to see you up close and in person. So there will be some effect. I did read the CEO of Southwest Airlines recently gave a fairly grim prediction for airline travel, and he said he thought it would take 10 years for airline travel to return to pre-pandemic levels. I hope that he's wrong, but I do believe that there will be some reduction that's probably on the more permanent level. Hmm.
Yeah, I hope it's not 10 years, but yeah. Who knows? Yeah. Well, in a COVID world, is North Dakota positioned to attract new businesses to North Dakota?
You know,
industry.
Yeah, I think we can be. I think we really do have to get this current situation under control. It is not a leaderboard that we want to be on to see that our number of active cases in the top one or two in the nation. But I think that if we can work together as a statewide community to get that under control, then absolutely. Because as I said earlier, our pandemic or this global pandemic cannot take away what's unique about North Dakota, which is our culture of hard work, our culture of community, of working together, of getting it done. And I also think that there is going to be a trend as a result of the pandemic for de-urbanization and, you know, people desiring to get out of the city center, to get out of people on top of people. And of course, we have a lot to offer there.
Are you concerned at all about rising COVID cases sort of in Western North Dakota, where mask wearing maybe is less than in the Fargo area?
I think that there's a lot of controversy and consternation, and I think unnecessarily so, about the issue of mask wearing. We know from studies, and I know there are those that disagree, but we know from studies that mask wearing, social distancing, good hand hygiene, absolutely controls the spread of infection. And I think to the extent that we can start thinking as a community, a statewide community, rather than a person who's concerned about individual rights and, you know, making a stand or making a statement about individual rights, I think that's a false narrative. And I think that we need as a state to get back to what we do best, which is thinking as a community. I think, you know, in North Dakota, I think we invented farm rescue, you know, with a situation where the farmer was ill or had passed away and he needed someone to come and harvest his crops. Meanwhile, every other farmer's busy doing the same, but we find a way to do it. We find a way to sacrifice self for community. And I think it's very similar here. So I'd like to see us really rally as a statewide community and do that work. My final thought on mask wearing is, what have we lost if we take that leap?
Here's a question. You know, we had SBA director here earlier. And is this a good time to go into business? Because there are people going into business still in the COVID environment.
Yes. Well, I hope so.
You're one of them.
I sure hope so. Yeah, actually, I think it's a great time to go into business. And of course, it depends on what business, right? There have been a lot of businesses and ideas and concepts that are changed forever. Some will go away, but some won't. And, you know, I was recently reading an article about how during past economic recessions or global financial crises, some of the best ideas are born. And even in the most recent financial situation, most similar to the current one we're in, some of the some of the world's most successful software companies were born during those times. So I think, you know, what do they say, that necessity is the mother of innovation? I do think that provided that you're looking at a business that isn't going to be disrupted by what's going on today, there's a lot of great potential out there.
Can you comment on who your successor might be?
Yes, I can. So I'm really pleased to share, for those that don't know, that Sean Kessel, who is the deputy commissioner today, has been named the interim commerce commissioner. And I'm really pleased for him. He will do an excellent job. He served as the interim commerce commissioner when I came on board. I think the team will be fortunate to have him serve in that capacity, and he'll do a great job.
What is the timeline for the governor to make a permanent decision?
Yeah, there is no predetermined timeline. I know that he's going to take his time and get the right candidate and not rush it. We always put talent before timeline, and I'm confident that he will follow that path.
What is the role of the Department of Commerce for North Dakota?
Absolutely. Something that I wasn't myself perfectly familiar with when I took the job several years ago, but the Department of Commerce has several divisions. And one of them is what might be the most obvious, which is economic development. We are also responsible for tourism for our state. And tourism and economic development are very, very related. A friend of mine in the industry once said that tourism is the first state for workforce expansion, for companies expansion. And I really liked that statement. We also do what we call community development. So we work with the federal government and local communities to build infrastructure to help make healthy, safe, vibrant communities. And then finally, we have a workforce division, and that's a chief concern of ours as well, also inextricably related to economic development. So it's a really great scope. It works well together. I'm really fortunate to have learned what I've learned in the last several years, and one of those things being what a great difference the Department of Commerce can make to businesses and citizens of North Dakota. And I think our most recent example is the Economic Resiliency Grant, where we were able to make available through the CARES Act, with the thanks to our legislature for approving the idea, over $66 million to assist North Dakota businesses in getting through this pandemic and getting out on the other side even stronger for a state that is resilient to these types of things.
During your tenure there, what was the most challenging part of your job?
I think for many that serve at this time, we will probably all reflect back on this and say it's certainly the pandemic. Absolutely the most challenging, but in certain ways, while I wouldn't have wished for a global pandemic, it really did reveal some wonderful strengths and leadership qualities of my team. It really did emphasize the commitment that the team at the Department of Commerce has to the state of North Dakota. I will remember it forever. We are 180 some days into a state of emergency, and many of those days have been some very, very long days, 18-hour days for weeks and weeks on end. These are folks that came to work every day and didn't complain and wanted to do what's best for the state so that we could get through this together.
Well, best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.
That was former North Dakota Commerce Commissioner Michelle Comer with Prairie Pulse host John Harris. Prairie Pulse is a Friday evening fixture on our television schedule, but this week it's moving to the next day due to a conflict with an election debate. You can see the entire show Saturday evening at 6:30. Next on Main Street, Tom Ezern.
Next time on The Pulse.
Well, I mean, I guess we all want to be happy, don't we?
We do, but achieving happiness can be elusive, or so it seems.
So yeah, we probably look at people who seem happier than we are and we would like to be like them. The trap, though, there is that we're often fed misinformation.
Finding happiness in surprising places.
Tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Tom Ezern's voice is very familiar to our listeners. For many years, he's melded his passion for history, he's a distinguished professor of history at NDSU, with his love of performing. The result is his Plainsfolk essays, snippets of history from a scholar with a resonant voice that occasionally breaks out in song. Today's essay is titled Comanche Bill.
Ballad hunters of the early 20th century captured from memory the folk song Dreary Black Hills. Stay away, I say, stay away if you can, far from that city they call Cheyenne. The ballad is a lament by a gold seeker in the Black Hills gold rush of 1876 who goes home broke and disillusioned. There are many such disappointed Argonauts who went home singing the song. I discovered the earliest known text of Dreary Black Hills, published in an Ohio newspaper in June 1877, and I found versions published in Kansas, Nebraska, Illinois, and other places within a year of that. All the song texts express terror and trauma about Indians and scalping, or, I am beginning to suspect, mock terror and mock trauma. It may be a spoof. The well-known Lummox text of 1910 warns, "For Big Wallapie or Comanche Bills will lift up your hair on the dreary black hills." Big Wallapie? Who ever heard of such a native? And Comanche Bill? What sense does that make? The Black Hills were 600 miles away from Comanche territory. Let's settle this hash. I think the song originated as a music hall ballad, composed and sung to entertain men in the mining towns. Music hall songs were a mix of the sentimental, the bawdy, and the comic. The made-up Indian names are a sort of joke. Still, where did they come from? There really was a character at the time who called himself Comanche Bill. He was not an Indian, but a white guy, a frontier celebrity. In fact, there appeared in 1872 a 100-page dime novel about him entitled Comanche Bill, or Black Wolf's Scalp, being the truthful history of a Western hunter who lived on rattlesnakes, had his 10 fingernails pounded off, but lifted 10 Indian scalps for the 10 finger ends, and finally tore the scalp from his mother's murderer. I haven't been able to lay hands on a copy of the novel, but I have tracked Comanche Bill, who said his real name was George W. Porter, through the newspapers. In 1871, Comanche Bill gave interviews to newspapers in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, Chicago, Illinois, probably other cities, apparently ramping up his reputation for the book. His story was that his whole family had been killed in the Minnesota Sioux War of 1862, that as a young lad he had returned from an errand away from home to find his dear Scots mother with an axe buried in her head. His little sister was taken prisoner. "I swore to God I would never rest until I had revenge, a bloody revenge," said Bill. And he searched high and low for his sister, all the way down to Arizona for some reason. The story sounds a lot like the plot line of the Western film, The Searchers. Comanche Bill wore buckskins and a broad-brim hat and sported luxuriant hair and mustache. He looked the part, he talked the part, but it is unclear whether he ever really traveled the plains at all. He claimed to have been a scout for various military authorities from Oklahoma to Montana. In 1881, Comanche Bill landed in Kansas City and regaled reporters with all his best tales, in the course of which he made disparaging remarks about Buffalo Bill Cody. The remarks were reported in Eastern papers, after which Buffalo Bill showed up in Kansas City and demanded to see that coyote they call Comanche Bill. Reporters located Comanche Bill, who had been drunk for weeks and who claimed acquaintance with Buffalo Bill. But Buffalo Bill disdainfully disclaimed the acquaintance, upon which local authorities hauled Comanche Bill off to the county poor farm. And one more thing. Comanche Bill was said to have had a favorite horse named Walleyed Pete. There's your origin for Wallapie in the ballad, I reckon.
That's Tom Ezern. Coming up on Main Street, Ashley Thornburg goes online to listen to a choir with a purpose beyond music. And Sue Balcom joins us for Main Street Eats. First, the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. New federal guidelines from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services could mean tighter visitation rules for long-term care facilities in North Dakota. State Human Services Director Chris Jones says some of the 215 long-term care facilities in North Dakota,
195 facilities have indoor visitation. All facilities have outdoor visitation. If we have to adopt the CMS guidance, 12 facilities will have indoor visitation.
Jones says he will be working with the federal agency to see if modifications could be made to the new guidance to allow North Dakota to continue its visitation plans.
Balancing COVID-19 safety and visitation restrictions with the well-being of residents in long-term care and other congregate living settings is an urgent priority for North Dakota. Social isolation because of COVID-19 visitor restrictions is a significant concern.
Jones says he believes the state has enough data to show that what CMS is suggesting isn't going to be any safer than what the state has already been doing, and he's hopeful the state will be able to continue its visitation plan. The Minnesota State Senate is debating a $1.9 million bonding bill. That bill passed the House last night. It had more than the required 3/5 bipartisan majority needed, and it's on course to reach Governor Walz. Senate Capital Investment Committee Chair David Sangem says it's a record breaker in size, but it chips away at a backlog of work.
It's a big bill from the standpoint of meeting needs across our state. There's no question about that. But I will tell you, if you travel this state, the needs are there. There's a lot of fixing up that needs to be done. There's a lot of investment that needs to occur.
The bill also contains about $200 million in tax cuts for farmers and businesses, and it patches a few holes in the state budget.
We call it a pop culture celebration because it's a little mix of everything.
And this year, the ValleyCon celebration has been called off. The annual event was expected to begin Thursday evening until new guidance was handed down by state health officials. Organizer Tony Tilton says even with plans to follow COVID-19 health guidelines, the recent surge in cases in the Fargo area proved to be too much.
We had more than what they do in any of the stores or anything around here. We had increased ventilation in the hotel. We purchased additional fans as if just to get ventilation through the hallways. Everyone was required to wear a mask. We had hand sanitizers everywhere. And temp checks, of course, before you even come in. And their thinking is that people in a large crowd are going to compound the issue, which I certainly understand. And there's, just not much you can do about it.
Tilton says the slate of celebrities and guest speakers have been very understanding about the last-minute cancellation. He says most, if not all, have said they are willing to come to Fargo for the annual Comic-Con scheduled for February. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. The global pandemic has certainly upended what we used to call normal. COVID-19 has forced people in workplaces and organizations to make sweeping changes. Today, Main Street's Ashley Thornburg reports on an online choir whose name reflects the sadness and the hope of this time.
For the past 10 years, Tuesdays have meant choir practice for Michelle Jelensky.
To think of a Tuesday where I'm not getting in touch with my choir, that feels very empty to me.
She started as a volunteer choir director for the Tremble Clefs, a tongue-in-cheek name for a choir for people with serious health conditions.
MS, Alzheimer's, other neurological diseases, TBI.
All right.
That voice
is never shared. No one did.
The group has weekly singing sessions as therapy to boost cognitive and motor skills.
When you are engaging your mind and your body with the use of music and with the use of lyrics, you are, as you're doing that, building new neural pathways.
The choir has also been a support group for them.
I can sing better than I can talk.
And caretakers.
My husband Bruce heard about the group. When he was still able to drive himself, he would go to the singing group and get himself back home. I would go and listen to them perform, but I did not sing with them then.
But you do now?
I do now.
A lot has changed in 10 years. Most recently, of course,
this COVID has knocked us all for a loop.
They have a few things working against them. For one, most members are old enough to be in a higher risk category. Most have an underlying condition. And group singing is riskier than some other hobbies. Without missing a beat,
Zoom has revolutionized the way teams communicate.
The group started meeting online.
Hey, Michelle. Hey, Michelle.
Yes, hello. Gotcha.
I'm sorry to say, but I had real trouble hearing.
We truly just became a family. Even if we cannot reach out and touch each other, we cannot hug, we cannot touch hands, we can reach out through the screen. I can see their eyes. I can see their smiles. We can hear each other. It's so important to just have that weekly connection.
A weekly connection that's become even more important because this group has had more than its fair share of deaths.
We'd like to start by recognizing some people who have passed away this past year. Margaret, Marilyn was next, Larry Kinseth, Gary Fisher, and then Al, beloved Al, and Jim Coffey.
Did you say 10 deaths in 10 years?
Yes.
And how many of those were just this year?
7.
Are you serious?
Yes, that was very deep for us.
That's right, 70% of the deaths in the last decade have happened just since COVID started. And while the deaths weren't specifically because of the virus, they're likely not unrelated.
When you are not able to connect with your loved ones and your family in that same sort of way, I really think it is so difficult for people emotionally, physiologically. Depression sets in. It's hard. And for people that are moving toward those later stages in life, it takes away everything that keeps them uplifted and looking to the future. And a lot of those tools that come with having your social structure with you, your support, those are gone.
For caretaker and choir member Amy Anderson, not being able to hug a recently widowed friend was deeply painful.
The warmth and tenderness and physical support that you can offer someone in a hug says a lot. And to kind of have to back off and keep at a distance just doesn't feel good.
They celebrated 10 years at a social distance picnic.
How does everybody feel about seeing each other today?
And that wanting to reach out and touch someone, it was palpable.
We're human. We want to touch.
What they did instead was change their name.
Viva Voce literally translates to with a living voice. We made it. We made it 10 years. We don't have any of our original members anymore, but we want to remember them. We do not want those memories to die. It's one voice, one purpose, bringing our living voices together for music that we want to share, not only with others, but with ourselves each week to connect.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a beautiful feeling.
Thank you. Bye.
The Viva Voce Choir is one of many supplemental health and wellness classes available through Heart Springs Community Healing Center in Fargo. You can find out more at heartspringscenter.org. Next on Main Street, Sue Balcom.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Starian Bank, determined to provide smart banking solutions with innovative checking accounts and personal banking tools that match your lifestyle. Starian, taking you farther. Learn more at starianbank.com. And by the Radisson Hotel of Bismarck, conveniently located in the heart of downtown with many opportunities to explore shops, restaurants, and nightlife within walking distance. More information on booking your next hotel room online at radisson.com/Bismarck.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg, and it's time to talk about Main Street Eats with Sue Belcom.
Sue, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Sue joins us once a week from her farm outside of Mandan, the Root Cellars Farm, to talk about food. And as the weather turns a little colder, it is nice to dig into some comfort food. And pasta.
You mean carbs?
Yeah, carbs. Definitely lots of carbs.
Got to bulk up
totally
for the season.
Totally carb
right.
season.
Yeah, it's winter weight. I mean, bears do it. Come on.
Bears do it. Bees do
okay,
it.
Then we're talking about something else, dear.
Oh, darn. Okay.
Talking about eating now.
How about
eating
popcorn?
Next best thing. Oh, and guess what? October is pasta month.
That makes sense.
Appropriately enough, you know, and one of the things that I've always taken great pride in telling people as I travel around the countryside is that North Dakota grows the best durum wheat for making pasta. And they'll probably find that as well as hard red spring wheat in a lot of flours that you can buy across the country come from North Dakota. And I love wheat fields. I'd rather see wheat than corn out there any day.
Well, when we go to the supermarket, we see North Dakota brands on the shelves.
That's exactly right. I think that there is actually Dakota Growers Pasta Company in Carrington. And of course, for flour products to make your own pasta, we have the North Dakota Mill in Grand Forks. And so I use Dakota-made flour all the time. I know, aren't we great? We could actually build a wall around North Dakota and we would be just fine, wouldn't we?
If all we needed was
probably
pasta.
Finer. Hey, I'm growing a few vegetables for you too. So, but you know, pasta is not bad for you, you know.
In moderation, of course.
Well, everything should be eaten in moderation. And you should eat a variety of foods,
always.
You know, on your plate. That's kind of a secret, too. When I get people that complain about, you know, weight gain or they can't eat this or they can't eat that, it's because you need to balance these things out while you're eating them so that your digestive tract has everything it needs to make your body healthier and stronger, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I love pasta because it's sort of this blank slate that you can put all this wonderfully tasting stuff on top of it, you know, like the sauce or the shrimp or the whatever.
Oh, yeah, angel hair pasta with shrimp scampi. Boy, that sounds good right now, doesn't it? And pasta is an easy meal. Your kids are going to love it. You know, there's nothing better than homemade macaroni and cheese. And my children grew up on homemade mac and cheese. So when they got out into apartments and they had friends and these friends are like, oh, yay, we're having macaroni and cheese. And they're like, what is this? They hadn't had anything except the stuff out of a box. And there's a world of difference in how the two of them taste.
Yes.
And I like putting jalapenos in mine to make it a little bit like adult macaroni and cheese, which is very popular now, man. You'll see that as a side dish in a lot of restaurants.
Oh, yeah. Like four different kinds of
macaroni and cheese.
Aged cheddar and, you know, what have you.
Little
noodles
bacon.
You can't pronounce. And, yeah.
Noodles.
Good.
I love noodles. I can't imagine what life would be like without noodles, which are a pasta, of course. And, you know, when you get pregnant for the first time and you go to the doctor, they prescribe vitamin for you that has folic acid in it, and it is to reduce cervical cancer and birth defects, and it makes your hair grow and your skin glow. And that is one of the good things about enriched pasta that you can find on the grocery store shelves. You get your recommended daily amount of folic acid when you have a plate of pasta. You all know runners always carb load with pasta products before they're going to do marathons, because there's a lot of energy from the complex carbohydrates in pasta.
I have carb loaded before a Netflix marathon myself, so it's totally the same thing, I'm pretty sure. So at the very beginning of this, Sue, you talked about durum wheat, and then I think the other one you said was red spring wheat.
Hard red spring wheat,
okay.
Yes.
What does that mean? What would a durum wheat have? Or what would a winter wheat have that a different kind of wheat doesn't have when it comes to pasta?
The only thing that I'm for sure about is their growing season is different, but it might very well be the proteins, the protein content in the grain itself. You know, you can get high gluten flours and low gluten flours, and that has everything to do with the protein content in the wheat when it is harvested. And have you ever walked through a wheat field? Oh my gosh. Or barley, like malting barley, which is a totally different subject, but you got to have beer with your pasta once in a while, right? but grains are so lovely, golden, beautiful golden fields of grains. But pasta is something that is easy and it's storable. So like if you're looking at hunkering down this winter, you know, there's nothing wrong with keeping a couple extra boxes of shell macaroni or linguine. You know, it comes in so many different sizes and shapes, and you can even make your own pasta and you can customize your pasta. I have a pasta roller because I am one of the privileged few people that have room to buy a couple extra little appliances in my kitchen. That and sometimes if you hide them from other people, they don't know you have them. But so I have a pasta roller that when I make homemade pasta, I can easily roll it out. Otherwise, you develop quite the biceps because
yeah,
it is a
hard.
Little bit of a chore.
Yeah.
Yes. And my daughter makes a lot of homemade, quote unquote, noodles, egg noodles mostly, which are a form of pasta. And yet, while your spaghetti noodles and things like that do not have eggs in them, so they are a little less caloric than the egg noodles are. And you're probably familiar with bags of curly egg noodles that your mom used to make tuna casserole with.
Certainly am. Yeah. I love that stuff.
Oh, so do I. And it's like you come home from work and you just boil some noodles and add a can of cream of mushroom soup and a can of tuna and a can of milk and some onion and maybe some peas. And you have like comfort food from the 50s or 60s, I guess. We're not old enough to have been cognizant in the 50s, right? Right?
Yeah, no, I was not.
Right?
Well, during the summer, there's somebody here who does remember the 50s, but during the summer, of course, you get that cold tuna salad that you can have with those macaroni noodles. But now we're heading into the cold season where we want hot stuff.
Right, which if you've never, you know, even if you don't want to stock up on pasta, and I love those shrimp or crab in there. Like when you get older, you can afford that. When you're young, your mom always bought tuna in the can. And so you can kind of like adultize your cold pasta salad. But if you want to try something just for fun, egg noodles are really easy to make. You know, they're simply flour with, you know, you put a pile of flour on your butcher block and you crack a couple eggs in there and you mix that together. And then the key is to allow it to rest. Now, some recipes, you put a little baking soda in. Some recipes, you put a little milk in. It depends on what cookbook you're looking at the time. But, you know, you can make those noodles and use them for things like stroganoff or goulash, noodle soup with carrots and celery and good chicken stock and tuna noodle casserole. And then if you're German and you make it through this winter, which I heard was going to be a little snowy, according to the Farmer's Almanac, you can make noodles and prunes on Good Friday because you're not supposed to eat meat that day. And I love homemade noodles and fried potatoes. Like, you brown your potatoes up in some butter, and then you throw those noodles in, homemade noodles that have been boiled for a couple minutes, and cook them up in butter with a little onion and breadcrumbs. Man, that is a good
dish. Nothing goes with carbs like starch.
So, oh, and something to remember too, you know, you mix your flour and your eggs and maybe your milk, and you let that rest, and then roll it out to whatever thickness you want. And it doesn't have to be paper thin. And then you can use like a pizza cup to cut them into strips. And then what I remember this from my childhood, is that the little old German ladies, like my grandmother and my mom, would put a dish towel over the back of a chair. I personally use my laundry drying rack to hang those noodles on so that they can dry. They have to air dry. And then you can store them. You can freeze them or store them in an airtight container in your refrigerator so you can make them ahead of time. But the best thing to do, in my mind, would be to cook them right away. And because it's fresh pasta, it takes minutes.
Like 2 seconds, yeah.
Yes, to get done. And I always think, oh my gosh, they're not going to turn out because they're so soft, but they always hold together. Now, if you're really, really creative, you can grind up some fresh wheat, or you can grind up buckwheat. I've made buckwheat flour noodles. They're not 100% buckwheat, but you put probably 50-50 in there. They are so stinking good when they're fried up. They get nice and crispy.
That does sound good.
But if you put them in your noodle soup, your broth gets gray, so that's very unattractive. So I had to quit doing that.
Sue, a quick question here about making egg noodles, or noodles that have something in them like egg or milk or whatever. When you let it rest, do you let it rest on the counter, or do you put it in the refrigerator?
Nope, I just leave mine on the counter. I have learned purely by accident that Niffla dough or bread dough or pie crust or anything needs time for flour to absorb water before you finish it off, because the consistency completely changes. So people who are, let's say, making strudels. See, where I come from, noodles have an extended family. Niffla, strudels, all that kind of stuff. And so if you're attempting this for the first time and you're just like mixing it up and then rolling it out and trying to stretch it and manipulate it, you will fail. The trick is to just walk away from it for 20 minutes or so and allow it to do its thing, and it becomes more elastic. The gluten kind of develops a little bit more. And then that way you will be successful. And then pretty soon you'll be having neighbors knocking on your door going, are you making noodles today?
Well, I'm going to try to make some noodles. I've never done that because I've always fallen for the convenience of the box, which I guess has a shelf life of, you know, the half-life of uranium.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try making it, especially the egg noodles. I think that's a great idea.
Oh, yeah, and you will love them. You will never go back to hard pasta again. You can buy little ravioli shapers.
If you make enough of a mess, you might still go back to store that. I've definitely made a lot of mess making noodles.
I know, and you know what? I actually do it on the counter. Like, I don't use a bowl. I just use the butcher block. And that is, it's really a lot of fun to try and capture an egg that's starting to escape off the side.
Well, you know, we'll leave you with that image. We check in with Sue Belcom every Thursday. It's always a pleasure, Sue.
Oh, thank you, guys. I love it.
Dakota Datebook is next.
Prairie Public is here to help you in the 2020-21 school year. PBS Learning Media has thousands of curated, standards-aligned videos, interactives, lesson plans, and more, easily searchable by grade level and discipline. And it's all free. Find it at prairiepublic.org/education.
This is Dakota Datebook for October 15th. Communities locked down when the 1918 influenza pandemic emerged in North Dakota. the outbreak of the so-called Spanish flu shuttered most aspects of daily life. On this date in 1918, the City Board of Health in Bowbells, North Dakota, ordered the closure of all schools, churches, theaters, dance halls, lodge halls, and other places of public gatherings, amusement, and entertainment. The board forbade all public meetings and gatherings and the playing of billiards in pool halls. The order followed a similar one issued by Burke County's Board of Health. Local health authorities also recommended keeping children at home and not allowing them to visit neighbors or play with other children in the streets. At that time, the Bowbells area allegedly had fewer than 6 cases of flu, and only a few can be called the Spanish variety, unquote. One of the first local deaths was of a 33-year-old mother of 2 who had been sick for 2 weeks and died from pneumonia brought on by flu. No public funeral was allowed. A newlywed couple from nearby Coteau, North Dakota, contracted flu and died days apart, less than a month after their wedding. They were 26 and 18 years old. The bride's 38-year-old mother died days after them. Bowbell's newspaper accounts generally downplayed the outbreak, which supposedly would be stamped out within 10 days or by, quote, a good rain or some cold weather, unquote. The paper also reported on dozens of residents and families sick, recovering, or dead from flu. Bowbell's druggist and undertaker both took ill. Visiting druggist had to fill in. Several teachers were also sickened. The Red Cross established a Bowbell's flu committee for reporting cases and determining each patient's needs. Every willing resident of Bowbell's was asked to help care for patients, doing their housework or giving other help. Women were asked to prepare meals for stricken families. Schools reopened after a week-long closure. Other parts of Bowbell's society would soon follow. A Thanksgiving ball was planned. We'll learn more about that in a future episode. Today's Dakota Datebook, written by Jack Dura. I'm Bill Thomas.
States and a few cities have a big deadline this week. Their COVID-19 vaccine distribution plans need to be submitted to the CDC. But that's just the beginning.
Planning is just that. It's not execution. When the whistle blows and we start this campaign, it's going to be, you know, close to a year-long effort.
How health departments are strategizing. On the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Thank you for joining us today for Main Street. As we broadcast, we stream at prairiepublic.org. And after the broadcast, you can find any Main Street show archived as a podcast at prairiepublic.org. Friday on our show, we'll hear about a new Indian Law Enforcement Advanced Training Center in North Dakota. We'll talk about the center and the opportunities it offers with Scott Davis, Executive Director of the North Dakota Indian Affairs Commission. News Director Dave Thompson will have his Friday analysis of the week's big stories. And Matt O'Lean will review The War with Grandpa, starring Robert De Niro. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Friday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.